Hello. In this audio snippet, we will continue talking about Black America and specifically about things happening after the end of the Civil War and after the supposed end of slavery. But before we get into that, I'd like to talk about four separate topics that are, I guess, on the surface, unrelated to this general topic of Black America, but I believe that at the end of the day, it is relevant because all of this discussion about Black America, the Civil War, and what it says about America, is geared towards looking at what has been done in the past and how we need to correct things to do it right in the future. That is the point of all of this. And these four separate topics are in a way related to that larger question of whether this country is capable of recognizing what it's been doing wrong so that it can start doing it right before it's too late. And I do believe that we only have 13 months now of time left for this country to change, to look at itself and realize we need to do this and go on this radical transformation. And if we don't make that change, if there's no awakening of some sort in this 13-month period that's left, then this country will die. Its calling, its future, its destiny will be over. And we will begin a definite decline into third world status. I do believe that if we unfortunately reach that death point, then it won't be like an immediate decline, a catastrophic decline, I would dare say. I believe it's going to start relatively slowly. And I believe that that slowness is, in a sense, merciful way of allowing the people who have an opportunity to live a better life to maybe, I don't know, find a better place to live or to at least not suffer as much in their last years. But after that, we will begin this steeper and steeper decline. To the point that America will no longer be considered a first world country, and its calling will be over. This country will just degrade into mediocrity, and not fulfill what it's supposed to fulfill. So we're reaching that very critical point, and we're just not reacting. And that's what's disheartening about all of this. We are not reacting. And these four things that I'd like to talk about all point to that. So, if America declines, then Black America will have no hope. Black Americans will have no hope. All the things that need to be corrected related to Black America will not be done. So it affects all of us. One of the things that would like to talk about is a recent special election that was held for a seat in Congress that became empty due to either the retirement or death. I'm not too clear on that. Of a certain representative. So this person retired, and the seat in Congress was open. And this person was representing Alaska. So because of that, a special election was held in Alaska to fill that empty seat. And Sarah Palin, who is from Alaska, as most of you all know, ran to occupy that seat. And as you know, that created a lot of attention across the country because people either love her or hate her. And so the election was held, and everyone's eyes were on Alaska to see how that election would go. And in this election, because it was a special election, it didn't go through the traditional primary system, where each party has its own local or separate primary election to decide who their representative will be in the general quote election. It's where we usually end up with two useless excrements, a Republican excrement and a Democrat excrement, and you have to choose between the two excrements. But because it was not a regular election, there was no primary, so it turned out that three different people became eligible to participate in this special election, and it was two Republicans and a Democrat. And obviously, one of the Republicans was Sarah Palin, and then there was another Republican who decided to run, and his name is something like Begich. I really don't know how to pronounce it, so I apologize if I'm not saying it right, but it really doesn't matter anyway. So if this Begich or whatever his name was ran. And then there was this Democrat, and I don't know how to pronounce her name either, and I really don't care to know the exact pronunciation. So I'll just say Peltola. So I'm sure it's Peltola or Peltola, but this was the Democrat candidate. So there was Palin, Begich, and Peltola, two Republicans and one Democrat. And that's kind of typical in a sense with Republicans because they always want to the Republican Party, its base, its system doesn't like people like Palin, that people that they consider quote radical right wingers. So they would rather lose an election than have a quote Republican right winger win, and Begich was sort of that type of candidate. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know the details at all, but I wouldn't be surprised if this Begich fellow was actually inserted by the Republican political machinery into this election just to throw a wrench in it, and so that he would somehow split the vote, the Republican vote, in some way to prevent Sarah Palin winning. So, and you'd say, oh, what kind of party does that? Well, for some reason, the American Republican Party does that. I don't think there's any other party on the face of the earth, political party, that would do such a thing to sabotage their own candidate and be willing to let the opposing party win rather than have someone that they don't like too much from their own party win. I mean, this is the American Republican Party is the only one that does that. I have never heard of any other political party on the face of the earth doing anything remotely close to that. So there were these three candidates, but it turns out this election was run with this new experimental system called radical. I'm sorry. It's called ranked choice voting, And we have talked about this type of voting in previous audio snippets. And we spoke of it in the context of what we need to do or and what needs to be written into the new American Constitution to end the party system in America and the power that the political parties have that leads to so much corruption and so much elitism and so much monopoly of power for wrong purposes. And we talked about this when we discussed the castration of the political party system, a system that maybe the founding fathers didn't, shall we say, officially put in place, but they sort of enabled it. They didn't design it per se, but they allowed it to happen and to grow. And we have continued with that system ever since. And conservatives, for some stupid reason, and the reason at the end of it of the day is idolatry, they complain about the parties and how things are. They complain about the Republican Party betraying them all the time. They complain about the Democrat Party doing this, that, and the other. But regardless of, despite all of their anger about what the parties are doing, they never seem to look back and say, okay, is there something wrong with the system per se that we need to change? Because anything that requires looking back and saying we've been doing it wrong all this time, and is very it creates a certain uneasiness in the Republican, in the conservative in particular, because it hints of an accusation against the founding fathers, and anything that accuses the founding fathers of having missed it or not having kind of figured out the perfect way of doing things or anything that makes the Constitution look bad, like, or lacking in some way, is automatically declared evil. If it insinuates that, then it must be false. And as we've said multiple times, that is the symptom of religious fanaticism. And we see it in the Democrats and the liberals and conservatives in America. Religious fanaticism is when you have this mindset, this ideology that you're indoctrinated with, that you're brainwashed with, and then anything that you perceive in the world is seen from the context of that ideology. That ideology is true. That's your starting principle. That what your religion says is true. And then anything that doesn't fit with your ideology, with your religion, is automatically considered false. So instead of the truth shaping your ideology, your ideology shapes the truth. And even if it's in front of you, if it's staring you in the face, but it contradicts your ideology, a religious fanatic will say that what I'm seeing is not true. If I have to make 2 + 2 equal to 5 in order for my ideology to remain true, that's what I'm going to believe. I'd rather believe that than reject my ideology. And that's religious fanaticism, where you're just blindly following an indoctrination and not allowing the truth to shape your thinking. And liberals do that all the time. And they constantly criticize the religious Christians for being fanatical about their faith and this and that. But they, in fact, practice that themselves. Liberals do that. And conservatives, who also criticize liberals for being so ideological, do it themselves, but at a subtler level. So we have this country full of people who are following their own religions in a twisted way, and no one is following or seeking after the truth. And because we're living in this environment, that's why the country is dying, and we have so little time left. And I must say, as a side note, that the reason why this country hasn't completely fallen apart already is because there is a small remnant of people who are at least willing to listen, but they're not enough. It's a very, very small group, and the country's being held together by their presence. It's as if that group of people, a very small group of people, are the ones holding everything together, preventing it falling apart. But it can only be held together for so long, and then it will slowly disintegrate. So because of this religious fanaticism, the conservatives have towards their God, and their God is not the God of the Bible. Their God is the Founding Fathers. That's their God, the Constitution. That's their God. The conservatives worship this God called the Founding Fathers and the U.S. Constitution. And because of this fanaticism towards their God, they never look back and question the party system. When we talk about the need to change the party system, they kind of get very nervous. But if we do get to the point of admitting, yes, this system does not work because it creates the central monopolies of power that we've discussed in detail before, then we need to change the voting system. Because we, up until now, we've had this two-party system. It's always been, always boils down to two candidates. So we've had elections where we have to choose between two people. And how do we get to two people? By having two established parties that decide for us which two people we will have. And that is related to the Founding Fathers, because it's at the heart of that elitism that they left embedded in the system. That the same elitism that, as we've discussed in detail before, led to this acceptance of federalism. And to this belief that we must be a republic, not a democracy, something that conservatives are always bragging about, that the Founding Fathers are so wise, that they were so wise that they left us with a system that is actually a republic and not a democracy, in the sense that a republic is this place where people appoint or elect these elite people to make the decisions for us, and decisions are not made directly by the people, because that would lead to demagoguery and to people being easily manipulated into doing all these things that will create a tyranny for the minority, which is ironic that they would think that, because federalism leads to the tyranny of the majority over the minority at the state level. But that's okay. It seems like that's okay. But all boils down to this idea that we need a group of wiser people that are not going to be controlled by radical emotions and will make sane decisions on our behalf. So we just elect this group of people, and these people will make all the decisions for us. And that's what the party system is, in a sense. It's these groups, elite groups of people who decide for us who the best two candidates will be. And we've had this system, and in a two-party system. Oh, and by the way, that is something unique about American history, because if you look in the history of most other countries, you will see that they've had a history of multiple parties duking it out in their electoral system. But in America, it's always been two parties for some peculiar reason. And I guess, in a sense, Great Britain also has a tradition of two parties, even though because it's a parliamentary system, they have there is more of a presence of other parties, in a sense, and these parties can have some influence in the political process. But at the end of the day, there are two major parties fighting for power. But so we've had this two-party system where each party decides for us, these are the two candidates. So in such a scenario, then the voting system is pretty easy. You know, you go and choose which of the two you want, and the one who gets the majority will win. And we've been happy going that stupid way all this time. And but if we're going to have a system where we don't have elites in some party smoke-filled room deciding for us who we should vote for, then we need a system that allows for the organic growth of candidates, so the candidates can grow into national prominence or state prominence, whatever the level of the election it may be, and become known to us without having to kiss the buttocks of some party elite in order to gain their support and become the nominee. So we need this organic system, and because if it's an organic system where the candidates relate directly to the people, we need a system that that allows for voting to make sense, where you have more than two candidates, because we're going to allow this growth of the candidates organically to allow the candidates to surface for us instead of the candidates being surfaced for us by someone else. And in that scenario where you can have four or five, six candidates, that majority voting system just does not work anymore, because you start creating the problem of splitting votes that are alike. So if you have two similar candidates, like in a three candidate situation, you have two candidates who are very similar, and then a separate third candidate, then the two candidates that are similar are going to split the vote between them and allow the other candidate who doesn't have any similar candidates running against him to win the election, even if he was the least popular of the three. So you can't have just a simple, you know, who gets the most votes system. We need a system that allows for the possibility of vote splitting and can handle that efficiently. And also, we've spoken in great detail about how important that is to deal with the issue of candidates who are who probably don't run or are not allowed to run because they are controversial, because they are trying to do something radical about the radical problems we have. And they have a little bit of political bravery, but that makes them a little riskier, and the parties don't like those candidates to run because they risk splitting certain votes, and therefore dark horse candidates don't run. So you just have the traditional safe candidates running all the time, the safe candidates that never do anything to change anything. So the corruption and decay just continues. But if we have a different system, then these dark horse candidates can be inserted, and then people will not be afraid to vote for them, because sometimes people don't vote for dark horse candidates because they feel like they're throwing their vote away. And then they just gravitate towards the safe candidate just to win. Or not lose as much. So it's always the least of the bad options that we're going for. So we need a system that is different, and we therefore began to talk about something like the ranked choice voting system. And it was we were sharing before that it was interesting that this sort of system was being talked about, especially here in the New York area. Just as I was thinking about all of this, and I said, oh, there we need a system like this. without me knowing it, there was people in New York were discussing using a system like that, and I knew it was not a coincidence, because it's like in the air that we are thinking about this idea, and it has to kind of land in some people's minds, and sadly, it was landing in the minds of Democrats. And because Republicans have this, conservatives have this idea that if a Democrat came up with it, it must be wrong, by definition. And because they believe we just need to keep doing the same thing over and over again, and somehow things will correct themselves if we do that, then they, in a knee-jerk reaction, immediately have rejected any type of system. And we spoke before about how there were, in a sense, two varieties of the ranked choice voting system that could be used. And I was a little bit ambivalent about which of the two is best, but I think it's becoming clearer which of the two we should use. One system would be where you assign where, for example, if there are N candidates, let's say four candidates running, then in the ballot, you can put in your top four choices. So you say, my top candidate is this, my second top candidate is this, and so forth. You order them, and then your top vote would get, in this scenario, 4 points, your second choice, 3 points, your third choice, if you add one, is 2 points, and your last choice would get 1 point. So it would be a point system. Instead of saying, I voted for so-and-so, it's just one vote, you would have four votes. So your first vote would be 4 points, your second candidate would have 3 points. So you're basically voting for four people at the same time, but you are giving them different points. And obviously, if you don't like the other two, let's say you only like two candidates, then you vote for number one and number two, so you give 4 points to your top choice and 3 points to your second choice, and you don't give any points to anybody else. And if we have it like that, then whoever gets the most points wins the election. And we kind of tried to discuss how that is mathematically better than the current system. And then there's the other choice, and that's what's being used by Democrats right now. And I'm beginning to see that there's something wrong with it. And it's a system where you kind of do runoffs automatically. So you say, let's say you have four candidates, then you then in that scenario you choose three, your top three choices. So what they do is, if no candidate gets a majority outright, then they throw out that the candidate who got the least votes, and then his votes are reassigned to the other remaining candidates based on who their voters voted next on their list. So if their candidate got defeated, then their second best choice gets all of their votes. So they do the vote counting again, and they keep doing that until and they keep eliminating the candidate with the least votes until you just have two candidates, and whoever has the most votes between the two candidates will obviously get a majority, and 50% or higher majority, and win. So that's the system that Democrats are using. That's called ranked choice voting. But I believe there's this other option that's point based. Instead of doing this thing about eliminating the candidate with the least votes and reassigning his votes, his or her votes to the other remaining candidates, it's better to have a just an outright point system, and we'll see why. But the thing is that this ranked choice voting system was used in Alaska, and in the first round, the Democrat, the woman Democrat got Peltola got 40.2% of the votes. And Sarah Palin got 31.3%, and Begich got 28.5%. So Palin came in second. She lost in that first round to the Democrat. And she lost by more or less 9 points. But the interesting thing is that if you add a Democrat and Republican votes, if you go back to this mindset, there are only two parties, there should only be two candidates, then the Democrats got 40% of the vote and the two Republicans got 60% of the vote combined. What happened was that because there was no 50% majority, Peltola didn't get an outright majority, then they eliminated the candidate with the least votes, which in this case was Begich. So his ballots were looked at, and whoever had whoever was number two got their votes. And as it turns out, half of Begich's voters chose Palin second after Begich. And 29% chose Peltola, and 20% did not rank a second choice. So 50%, or let's say, just to round it up a bit, 50% voted for Palin second, and 30% voted for Peltola, the Democrat. So what they did was then they reassigned those, 50% of Begich's votes to Palin, and 30% to Peltola. So Palin gained votes in that second round, you could say. And the final results, however, were not enough to overtake the Peltola. And Peltola ended up with 51.5% of the votes and Palin with 48.5%. So she lost by 3 percentage points. So she had lost by 9 points in the first round, 9 percentage points in the first round, and in the second round she lost by 3 points, and we're saying second round without a runoff. So it's not that they ran a second election; they just recounted the votes using the system, and then an article came out in one of the conservative websites that I go to read every now and then to see what's going on, and there was this person who is very well known, at least on that website. I think he's one of the founders. And he was saying how the Democrats had stolen the election and how they used this confusing system. He kept talking about how confusing it is and that the voters didn't know what was going on and they didn't, that's why they didn't put in Palin is their second choice, and it's also confusing, blah, 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 blah. And instead of a runoff election, they have this confusing system, and that's how the Democrats once again stole another election. And not that they haven't been stealing elections, that's not the point. But what angered me about it is that the article basically just gave the first round results, and then the final results, and it just complains about what happened, but doesn't go into the details of how Palin ended up losing when the votes were distributed. So it just complains about it and says we should, instead of having a runoff. And when I read that, I said, "You stupid idiot, conservative." The runoff happened immediately. In the second round, when Begich's votes were redistributed, that was the equivalent of a runoff. And obviously, when the Begich's votes were distributed, assuming that there was no counting fraud, that's a separate topic, but that has nothing to do with the system per se. But assuming there was no counting fraud, then Begich's votes, were reassigned, and apparently not enough of the Republican Begich's votes went to Palin second, which is sad because you would think that they would have made sure to put another Republican second if they really didn't want a Republican to represent them in Congress anymore. So so he just complains and he doesn't go into details. And that told me, okay, there's this inherent resistance that the conservatives are refusing to let go of. And the time's running out and they're still holding on to this stupidity. So I had to go search and go to liberal websites to find out the numbers, to know exactly what happened. And that's how I know that 50% of Begich's votes went to Palin and 30% went to Peltola, to the Democrat. And that 20% more or less of the voters didn't have a second choice of the voters for Begich. So I had to go to the liberals to find out the details and the numbers. And that's when I realized, yeah, she lost anyway, because the supporters of Begich, this Republican rhino, I'm sure he's a rhino. I'm not even sure if he's a man. I think he is a man. Didn't check that. But let's assume he's a man. He's a rhino, and the people who voted for him were not that enthused about Palin, because otherwise, why would 30% of the voters for a Republican choose a Democrat? So that tells you there's something wrong with the Alaskan population that voted there. They are a little bit rhinoed out. You know, it's this Alaska. It's not as red state as many people would think. I'm not surprised by this. It was not so much that the system failed them, failed Sarah Palin. It's just that the people just didn't step up to vote. And for them, for all these conservatives to talk about how confusing the system is, it's like saying, you know, the same people who get to know the Medicare, Medicaid system intricately, who handle insurance policies all the time, who have to pay taxes in this very complicated system that we have in this country, the very same people who do all of these complicated things in their normal lives are too stupid to understand that in this voting system, you have to choose. You like this one, and if this one doesn't get all the votes, who is your second choice, and who is your third choice? How complicated is that? I mean, you have to be you have to be very stupid not to understand what that entails. It's not like the voters are going to say, "Oh, I have to put in my second choice." What is that? Can you explain what second choice is or third choice? I mean, are Americans that stupid? But apparently, they are when. It in any way involves changing something that the founding fathers left behind. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is because of the stupidity of conservatives being so caught up in, instead of saying, okay, let's analyze the data and let's see how can we use this type of system to prevent the traditional party elite licking candidates being nominated all the time and always having to vote the safe choice, the quote safe choice. Instead of doing that, they just poo-poo the whole thing and say, oh, it's the Democrats coming up with this craziness. But when I went online and had to go to liberal websites to find out more information, I found out from a place that I would rather not even touch. I had to go to the Washington Post, a worthless organization full of crazy liberals. And they had this article saying, oh, Palin is complaining about the, because she also complained about this ranked choice voting system. Because she was complaining about how complicated it was, she was also, you know, accepting the conservative explanation of things. They were criticizing her for saying things like that, But then they turned it around and said she just lost the a seat to for the Republicans, and they said that apparently, I assuming that they have the real numbers, that Palin's voters voted 59% for Begich as their second choice and 6% for the Democrat Peltola as their second choice. And they were saying if Palin had not been if the one who had been eliminated in the first round had been Palin instead of Begich, ironically, Palin's votes would more of them would have gone to Begich, and he would have overtaken Peltola in the second round. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is that it kind of illustrates that there's a problem with this ranked choice voting system when it's, you know, by eliminations, you know, where the candidate with the least votes gets eliminated and all his votes gets transferred to someone else, because it's this is a case of what I would call something like asymmetry. And when you have a pattern or a model that is asymmetrical, where you can get these very odd results that don't make sense, then that is an indication that the model that you're using is not very good. So you have a scenario here where if you eliminate the candidate who got the least votes, but the candidate who got the second least amount of votes, then the candidate that you would have normally eliminated would have won. And that tells you, hey, there's something very wrong with the whole system. What I did was I went to an Excel spreadsheet and kind of tried to run the numbers and say, okay, what if we had used a point system where we said, you know, there are two possibilities for a point system where, let's say, if you have three candidates, you only vote for two. So you give your top choice 2 points and your second choice 1 point, and you don't vote for a third choice. Or you have a system where you have three candidates and you can vote for all three and rank them, you know, top choice would get three, second choice would get two, and last choice would get one. So there's two possibilities for this point system. So I ran it with both options, but since I don't have all the numbers to know exactly how things would have turned out, I had to kind of add or make a guess of how the other numbers would be. And as it turns out, and it's not because of the assumptions I made about the missing numbers, but when I ran the numbers, there were two scenarios where either Palin would have won by a point system or Begich would have won. And in neither of the scenarios that I tried did Peltola ever win with a point system. In fact, in one scenario, I got Begich with 38% of the points, and Palin was second with 36.5% of the points, and Peltola was last with 25% of the points. And in all the scenarios that I tried, it always came out Begich first and Palin second. So the Republican would have won. And yes, it's a rhino, it's a piece of dirt, but that's more of a reflection of the stupidity of the Alaskan population, who apparently were not too happy about sending Sarah Palin to Congress. Not enough. She was competitive, but we have a scenario here where we have two candidates who were in a sense splitting the Republican vote, but still have a situation where one of the two gets elected. So this system works. The point system works. It works better than the other elimination rounds system. So conservatives, in a sense, do have a point that there's something wrong with the system. It's not perfect. In this scenario, this very particular scenario where we have someone like Palin, who is loved and hated so much, even within her own party, that things, you know, get a little more complicated. The point in all of this is that we have the country falling apart. We need to eliminate the power of the parties. Everybody complains about the power of what the parties are doing, but no one tries to change the power that they have or don't care to, neither side. And instead of evaluating how we can reshape the voting system to enable the organic rise of candidates, we're just poo-pooing everything. And instead of analyzing things and looking at mistakes and say, okay, this didn't work, this scenario, the Palin election, this type of rank choice system is not quite perfect. Let's look at the point system. Instead of doing all this thinking about drafting something new and innovative, all we're doing is just say, let's go back to the way we were. You know, it's all like, let's throw out any new ideas and let's go back to the way we were. And as I'm going into this, let me just point this out. And we've been talking a lot about these things, and I don't think we're going to get to black to the Civil War stuff, but it's worth saying anyway. This country is divided. Just like we were in the Civil War, there's North and South in a certain sense. And South, by South, I mean the conservatives of today. And North, I mean the liberals. And it's this very dichotomous nature that the country has. And both sides of this family are twisted. The South has the traditions, the Christianity and the morality, the values and all this stuff. But in the midst of all of that, or in a certain sense, because of all of that, it has this very stagnant mindset, and because of it, the South is relatively poor compared to the North. It's still a backward society, and it's also the curse or the consequences of not having done things right after the Civil War, not having repented. So the South is continuing with that lingering curse on it of underdevelopment and poverty, relative poverty, at least compared to the North. And that curse, in a sense, manifests itself in its lack of creativity. You don't have the economic creativity in the South that you have in the North. That's why the North seems to run the economy, run things, because they are creating and innovating and doing these things and creating industries and pushing new technologies and all these things, while the South is just trapped in the past. So we have this, but the thing is, in the North, what we can call the North, and that would include California in a sense, even though it's not, quote, the North, socially speaking, let's call it all of whatever's not in the South, let's call it the North. These people are more innovative, but they are they're morally corrupt, and they have no true value, no true ethics. They have no substance in them in terms of moral values and things like that. Or just philosophical understanding of life. They are liberals. They have no concept of truth, logic. But if they were the whole country, if the North, the liberals, were the whole country, their economy would just collapse, because it's not. They have nothing of truth in them. So they would just run amok and become a corrupt economy and fall apart very quickly. But they don't fall apart because there's a moral backbone in the South. But the moral backbone is so stiff that it has no growth in it. So it stays poor, but in a sense, it is blessed by the economic production of the North. So it is recompensed, in a sense, for its morality by the work that the North does to feed it. And the North has production because the South gives the country a moral backbone that allows it to remain in existence. So you have these two codependent people. The North depends on the South because without the South and its morality, moral backbone, the North would collapse. The economy would become so corrupt and so decayed that it would just collapse and there'd be no wealth and no creation. So so the North depends on the South to continue growing. And the South depends on the North because the South does not have creativity of its own because it's so stuck in the past. So it depends on the North being the creative ones and doing all these things and pushing all this innovation and change in order for it to then have to share in that wealth as a kind of a overflow, receive an overflow of that wealth. And that's why you end up with the North running the show. The North is, why do you think that we have all this censorship on the internet and stuff? Because the companies that run this are run by the people of what we're calling the North right now, the liberals. They are the ones innovating and creating and doing all this website stuff and adding this new technology and this and that and adding this new operating system and all that. They are the ones innovating. And because they're the ones innovating, they end up in control of the media, of the internet. And then they start doing the censorship because they are in control. The South is just watching and just following the lead of the North economically. So that we have this very kind of dysfunctional country with these two sides. And because it's so dysfunctional, it cannot, you know, a house divided like that cannot stand, and it will eventually just decay. And we have 13 months literally left for us to fix this. And for, you know, maybe not fix it in the sense of resolving it all in just 13 months. I mean, having an awakening, a moment of lucidity where we realize, oh my goodness, what are we doing wrong? We really need to radically change the system, change what we're doing because this is dysfunctional. The people with the moral backbone should be the ones driving everything. People with the character and the integrity, instead of having to delegate the creativity and the production to the evil people who have no moral backbone, they should be the ones driving things. And there's no drive of that in the conservative. In the American conservative Christian, there is none of that. Everything is tradition, the past. They don't create, they don't innovate. I mean, you would think that a Christian who believes in God, in their God, and the God of their Bible would say, I am going to prove to the world that my God is real. And I'm going to give glory to the God that I worship every day by creating the best system in the world, or doing this or doing that, doing the other, and showing the world what a believer of my God can achieve, and that I am following the true God. And by my success, I will be glorifying my God. I mean, you would think that a conservative Christian would think like that and be a driving force and prove that his God is the real God by all the success that he has. But no, they just want to live in this traditional thing, waiting for this stupid thing that they call the rapture, where they will be taken out and go off to La La Land somewhere in the sky while the rest of the world goes to hell. So that's the American conservative in a brief summarized statement. So this Palin election just bore out this reluctance to look back. It's as if I know that most people or conservatives would never even listen to an audio snippet like this one, but it's as if they are reacting in the air, like they're hearing something about we need to change the voting system. and they react viscerally to it, saying, "No, no, no, no. Are you questioning my founding fathers? Are you questioning my God? Are you questioning the people whom I worship? How dare you?" And that's why we are where we are. So that was topic number one, and I thought I was going to be able to talk about it in 10 minutes, but apparently not. So the second thing I'd like to talk about is an article, by if I'm not mistaken, the same person as the person who wrote the article complaining about the ranked choice voting system. And this article was about illegal aliens. And I'm going to quote a few things from that article. The name of the guy, the writer, is Jim Hoft. And he wrote, quote, "Joe Biden and Democrats welcomed over 2 million illegal aliens into the U.S. in fiscal year 2022. And the year's not over. And the number does not include the known getaways, the illegals who did not want to get caught on their way across the open border." So he's talking about, we have had 2 million illegal aliens enter the country in 2022. And this is as of August or September of this year. And that's just crazy. And I don't question his number. I do believe it's more or less that. It might be a little bit less, might even be a little bit more, but I do believe it's around that number. And that's crazy, and I agree with him. That's crazy. But what saddens me is what he writes later in the article. So a short article, but he wrote later on, quote, "Democrats want the destruction of the United States. Democrats see the country, its history, its laws, and its people as irredeemably flawed. The country needs to be rebuilt in a new global socialist system." So he's saying the Democrats are allowing the influx of all these illegal aliens to destroy the system from within. And I completely agree. That's exactly why they want it. Because they know that these illegal aliens come with the third world mentality, where they demand that the state do something for them. That's why their countries are so corrupt and so fallen apart. I completely agree with that. Look at what happened in Venezuela. They had a thriving economy. Well, thriving by third world standards, they had poverty and all that, but they had relative wealth. They had been an oil exporting country, and money was coming in, and they could do their telenovelas, because Venezuela is known as at least years ago it used to be known as this production company of telenovelas. They just produced, just like Mexico and Venezuela were the two countries that produced telenovelas, Hispanic telenovelas, for the rest of Latin America. I mean, yeah, because no one else outside of Latin America cares to watch those things. But Venezuela had this thriving telenovela market and this economy that was receiving all this inflow of money. And they had relative prosperity. And then a socialist came and promised them the world. And the poor people said, yes, let's vote for them. And when things started getting worse and worse, this little bastard Venezuelan started saying, oh, let's hand out goodies. So that he would send truckloads of things into poor neighborhoods and hand out free stuff from the government. Say the government is giving this to you. So they've become even more and more enamored with the communist regime, and the collapse just continued. And eventually, we all know what happened to the Venezuelan economy, just completely collapsed. And then this bastard communist ended up dying. He's in hell right now as we speak. And another little bastard boy took over. And the Venezuelan people just continued with the same nonsense. And I don't think to this day, at least a significant number of people do, but I don't think enough Venezuelans, at least amongst the poor who voted for this communism to begin with, are still willing to admit that they did something wrong. It's like they blame maybe the guy who came afterwards for things going bad, but they don't see themselves as having made a mistake of having fallen for communism and socialism to begin with. So, and that's a mentality throughout Latin America. Believe you me, it's all this mentality of the government owes me something and give it to me. So the Democrats want that mindset here. They want to undermine the country from within. I agree with everything the guy is saying. But the sad thing is, they said he's saying the Democrats see the country, its history, its laws, and its people as irredeemably flawed. And that goes to the heart. It's as if this guy had been listening to these audio snippets and reacted viscerally to this notion that America is fundamentally flawed. How dare you say that? But now he's attributing it to the Democrats. Like, anyone who wants a fundamental change of the system must be a Democrat, a commie, a socialist. And you're a globalist. Do you want the country to be submitted to this global agenda and the Great Reset and blah, 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 blah. So any talk of having a fundamental change is completely rejected. But they know it. I'm sure this guy is a Christian. I'm sure it's as if his God was trying to tell him, you need a fundamental change or your country will die. You need a fundamental change. And he hears it in deep inside of him, and he doesn't want to hear it. So he blames the devil for hearing these things. And he wrote at the very end of the article, a brief article, quote, "We are living through the collapse of American civilization, and the masses are silent." So he knows the country's dying. This guy knows. He knows. We all see it. We know. He knows the country's dying. He said it. We're living through the collapse of American civilization. And instead of saying, hey, maybe there was something wrong in our foundation and we need to correct it, this is why my God who created me is allowing this the collapse of this country. Because we must recognize that there's something fundamentally wrong. Instead of doing that, he just blames the devil for everything, and that's where it ends. And then he says the masses are silent. So he doesn't understand we need to change our point of view, and then things will change. If we decide to change the country from its foundation and profane the altars to the founding fathers and profane the Constitution, the current Constitution, that's when the change will come. That's when we will have a true redemption of the country from its fundamentally flawed system, and not so that we can then go into a global socialist system, as he's kind of insinuating that that's what we would end up with. It's not like we have two choices: continue with the founding fathers or end up with global social elitism. It's not an either or. Both are wrong. But they don't get it. Conservatives just do not get it. And the third thing that I wanted to talk about is related to this illegal alien stuff. And it has to do with the current regime in the White House has been allowing has opened up the borders. Yes, the borders that were closed up with this big wall that Trump promised so many times. He never built it. He never finished it. He built parts of it, but he never finished it. And even if he ran again and won, which he's not going to, he would never finish it. Believe you me, he would never finish it. So all these people are coming in. The people in power who stole the election are just letting them flood in, and the border states are. And on top of that, they have started shipping, or flying these people from the border states into red states. because they literally, I mean, it is so evil. They're transporting all these people into red states because they want to infiltrate these states and turn them blue. So the people who have been receiving these people and the border states who are red states have kind of tried to give the Democrats a taste of their own medicine. So we have the governor of Texas flying illegal aliens to New York, coming here to New York and dumping them here. And the mayor of New York has been very upset about all these illegals being dumped here. Like, oh, that's, why are you dumping all these people here on us? Which is ironic because they keep doing it to the red states, but when it's done to them, it's suddenly a problem. And a lot of illegals have been dropped into Florida. So the governor of Florida, DeSantis, has been shipping them off to blue states. And he sent 50 Venezuelans. Interesting. And I was talking about Venezuelans a moment ago, and I know it's not a coincidence. He sent 50 Venezuelans to Martha's Vineyard. And for those of you who do not know, Martha's Vineyard is an island off of Cape Cod. It's part of the state of Massachusetts, and it's an island where very rich people live. And Barack Hussein Obastrid and all these liberal elites live in this island, if I'm not mistaken. And it's very liberal, very rich, very elite, very upper class. And DeSantis sent all these 50, just 50 Venezuelans, and dumped them there, illegals. And the people at Martha's Vineyard got all upset. Why are you dumping all these people on us? And we don't have any place to host these people. How dare you? And you know, they have big mansions and everything. They have more than enough resources if they really care so much about these illegals to house them and provide for them as they settled into the country illegally and so forth. But no. So they took them and they shipped them away from Martha's Vineyard. I don't know where else they ended up being dumped, but and this created a big uproar and exposed the hypocrisy of the Democrats and all that. But as all of that is happening, I get disheartened because I go, why the hell are we helping illegals get spread across the country? I know even the act of dumping them in blue states and all that, but first of all, you know, I'm living in the New York area. Why are you dumping the illegals here? I don't want them here. I don't want them anywhere. But aside from that, what we're doing is helping these illegal aliens spread across the country so that they can find jobs in, you know, across the nation. Why are we doing that? Why, if I was the governor of one of these states, I would go, okay, you know, this is the only country on the face of the earth that does something like that. If you get caught illegally in any country, what they do is deport you. End of story. They catch you and they send you back to your country. That's as simple as that. But no, we are so, we know these guys are illegally here, but and we know they're there. We have them in our, you know, in our grasp. And instead of sending them back, we let them go further inland into the country. So even if these acts of shipping these illegals to Martha's Vineyard and all these other blue places seems like a good idea, at the end of the day, it's just helping Democrats, you know, do the Democrats' job of spreading illegals across the country. If I were one of these border states or red states with illegals, I would put them on a plane and send them, deport them to their countries, back to their countries, and then that would create a big uproar because according to the revered Constitution, only the federal government has the power to control things related to international matters with illegal aliens or immigration and things like that, and the states don't have the power to do that. But, you know, the whole system is broken down. We can't go by, oh, we have to go by the system and this and that and the other. And again, the Constitution is so ambiguous about so many things that even if you could argue that point that only the federal government can deport illegal aliens, it's not clear enough in the Constitution that you can start playing around with it. And I would ship them back. And that would create a legal quagmire, and I'd get sued, and it would go all the way to the Supreme Court. But while all that's happening, I'd still be shipping them off. You know, it's like, do it and then ask questions later. Like, you know, like the old saying, it's better sometimes to just do it and then apologize than to ask for permission. So just go ahead and do it. Just ship them off. That's what I would do. And then it would create uproar. And what's the federal government going to do? Are they going to come and put me in jail? Do they have the power? Imagine. See, I would provoke the system, the whole thing, to get to a boiling point, because enough is enough. If they imagine what would happen if the Democrats sent the federal government to go capture a governor and put him in jail. Can you imagine the what that would lead to? I mean, then we'd have a confrontation and finally kind of deal with things instead of living in this state of constant chaos. And you know, that's how cancers happen. And that's another story for another audio snippet that's unrelated to this. But a cancer is when your body has become accustomed to something and accepts it as normal, and ignores the pain or the problems associated with that uncomfortable situation. When it starts lying to itself, that's how cancers develop. But that's another story for another audio snippet. That may sound like a completely strange or odd thing to say, unrelated. But that's the cancer. And we've had this cancer figuratively in our society, where we've accepted this crazy state of things like the norm, as if it was the normal state, when we just have to get to the point. Like, let's have it out. And if that was a little bit too controversial, you know, deporting illegal aliens, what I would do is the second best choice. I would take all these illegal aliens and dump them in Puerto Rico. And why not? Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. And I'm not sending them off to a different country, so they can't complain that I'm violating or intruding on federal. By the way, the federal government has the responsibility of controlling immigration. If they're not controlling it, they lose, and the states suffer on account of their irresponsibility. Then the state has the right to fight back. If the federal government is not doing its job, then the state has to step in, and that's why the state has gains the de facto right to deport illegal aliens. That's how I would argue it. But if that was complicated, or while that was being fought out, I'd also be shipping them off to Puerto Rico. Why not? They speak Spanish in Puerto Rico. They're Hispanics. Puerto Rico's Hispanic trash like everybody else in Latin America, in Hispanic America. They should fit in. And I can tell you this, the people of Puerto Rico would not like these illegals being dumped in their country, because they are elitist. Within the Hispanics, Puerto Ricans have this reputation of being this arrogant bunch of people who think that they're better than the rest of the Hispanics, even though they are trash like them too. But Puerto Rico, you know, because they are U.S. territory, it receives an overflow of wealth that they would normally not have, you know, with their corrupt system. And I say this out of experience. I've dealt with Puerto Ricans, and for the most part, they are, you know, a few are more or less decent, but for the most part, they are very arrogant, very evil, very rude, very disrespectful. They're evil people. I can see why they don't prosper. They are in constant debt. They've gone bankrupt and are being on the verge of bankruptcy for years and years and years. And so despite sharing in the wealth, overflow of wealth of the U.S., they are still suffering. But they feel that they're better than the rest of the Hispanic trash, and they would hate illegals being dumped on their country because they don't treat them with respect. People don't understand this. Within Hispanic America, they don't like people from other countries immigrating into their own countries. Look at Mexico. You can ask a Mexican or people who are aware of things in Mexico. In Mexico, people who come in from the south, the countries to the south of Mexico, into Mexico, they are not welcomed like, oh, yes, there are Hispanic brothers, and they don't see them that way. In Mexico, they have this thing where sometimes if they suspect that you are not a Mexican, that you're there illegally, they will start talking to you and using verbiage that is very specific to Mexico, you know, words that only Mexicans use, you know, because there's a lot of variety of Spanish words in different countries. You know, each country kind of develops their own slang, you could say. So some things that you would say in one country don't make sense if you say it in another Hispanic country, even if it's all Spanish. So what Mexicans would do, the population, they would, if they detected that someone was potentially not a Mexican was pretending to be a Mexican, they would start talking using words that they would know only a Mexican would understand. And if they would catch them not understanding it, then they would report them to the federales, to the police, and they'd get deported. They are not welcomed. You know, Mexicans don't like the people from the south of Mexico coming in. They don't like it at all. And the same with us, every country in Latin America, in Hispanic America, they don't like people from another country. They don't help each other. Yet they demand that the U.S. help them. So when they come here, suddenly we have to be hospitable. We have to say hello, well, bienvenido, welcome to our wonderful country. Press one for Spanish and so forth. And they don't do that for themselves in their own countries. They don't care for each other. But we are supposed to care for them. That's the hypocrisy. So I would send them all to Puerto Rico and dump them there. It's a part of the U.S. They speak Spanish. The Puerto Ricans should be more than happy to have their Hispanic brothers come into their land. Because, you know, they bring blessings, according to Democrats, to every place that they go to. And Puerto Rico is a Democrat hellhole. They run by Democrats, controlled by Democrats. So they should be more than happy to have all these illegal aliens dumped there. And the reason why no one is thinking this way is because in the country, there is really not, there are not enough people thinking outside the box and understanding reality. I don't think DeSantis understands the reality of the Hispanic culture and how Hispanics don't care for each other in their own countries. When someone from another Hispanic country comes into their country, they reject them. They have to live in this kind of subterfuge, even within Hispanic America. So we don't have people thinking. We don't have people say, okay, let's... And DeSantis is more or less, you know, trying to shove it in their face. So he's trying to fight back. But he doesn't have the clarity to go all the way, to do it exactly as it has to be done to effect a true transformational change. If I were DeSantis, I'd be deporting the 50 Venezuelans, instead of helping them go to Martha's Vineyard and redistribute them across the country, I'd have sent those 50 Venezuelans back to Caracas, to Venezuela. You know, you go there. I will put you on a plane. You're going to Venezuela, and you know you're Venezuelan, so the Venezuelan customs in Caracas should welcome you because you're their citizens. So that's exactly what I would do. With Venezuelans, I guess in this particular case, things would be a little different because Venezuelans some of them. I would evaluate, I would do a test change, and this is part of the immigration change that we have to do. We have to change the system to see who loves America and who's coming here for convenience. And those who come for the freedom, and many of the Venezuelans some of them are like the Cubans who are coming to this country for the freedom, not just for the money. I would give them asylum, and I would help them get settled in this country. The ones who are here because they love America and they want to live in freedom, those I would let stay. But the rest I would just send back, along with the Mexicans and everybody else, the Colombians and all this other trash that's been coming here. And I call them trash because they don't come here for love of the country. They come for the love of the dollar. That's all they care for. And once they're here, they corrupt the whole country. I can give you an example. Just last week, I think it was last week, if I'm not mistaken, I was sitting on a stoop in New York City with my laptop doing some work. And this was in lower Manhattan. So we're not talking about this, I was not in Spanish Harlem. I was not in a tough ghetto neighborhood. I was in Soho, which is a high, a rich kind of district or neighborhood in Manhattan. I was sitting on a stoop with my computer doing my work. And then I look up and in front of me, there was the space between two parked cars right in front of me. And I looked up and I ended up like looking straight towards the space between the two cars. And the reason why I looked up is I heard a sound. And right in between the two spaces, there was this car on the street that had stopped. I don't know if it was because of traffic, but it had stopped right in front of me between these two parked cars. The space, and it had just the guy had pulled down the window, the car window, and he had just thrown this plastic cup, you know, with ice in it, like a soda plastic transparent cup, to the ground. He just threw it to the ground, and the ice in the cup is what made the sound that made me look up. So the guy just threw it in the ground like he couldn't care less. And then he pulled up the window and then the car started moving and he left. And I looked and this was the passenger who did this. The passenger and the car driver, I saw them because they were right in front of me and they were both Hispanic. And I could see a smile on their face as they threw the cup just like that on the ground. And it was right there in front of me. And I said, oh, worthless sons of bitches, worthless Hispanics, worthless bastard culture, because I see them do that all the time. Everywhere I look at them, they always throw things out on this. They litter. And you say, oh, that's a minor thing. No, it's a reflection of their selfishness. Why do you need to throw something on the street like that? You're in your car. You could put your cup somewhere and then throw it out when you get off the car. Put it in a trash bin. It's not like he was holding a million things and he had to throw it away because his hands were full. And I saw the glint in his eye as he threw it. I saw the joy. He was like a smirk on the guy's face, and the car who was and the driver was also smirking as if to say, "Look, we are throwing trash on the street here in Manhattan in front of all these white folks." And all these other folks, and no one's going to do anything, right? And like, And I see that all the time. It's an evil culture. It's trash, just like the trash they throw. That's what they are. And the sad thing is that cup stayed in front of me, and like 30 minutes later, the space opened up, in front of me in terms of parked cars. And a car came to park there. And as the lady was parking into that spot, her car tires ran over the plastic cup and it made this horrible sound, crack, this terrible sound. And I said to myself, yeah, that cup's going to be there for who knows how long. And that's the reflection of the selfishness, the Hispanic selfishness. So this is trash. But no one knows how to deal with it. And then we have conservatives who also take the radical right. Oh, we don't want any immigrants or any Hispanics or illegal aliens. But they don't understand that amongst the illegals, there are a few, even from Latin America, who deserve to be let in. But we need to change the system to be able to evaluate which come for the freedom and which come for the money and who are trash and should be sent back. We should change the immigration system to evaluate character. But conservatives don't even go there. No. Just send them all back. Just send them all back. And yes, most of them need to be sent back, but you don't send back everybody. You have to evaluate. There are certain people that deserve to be here. Even if they don't have their papers or whatever, they deserve to be here. And I'm including Hispanics or people who are supposedly, quote, Hispanics. Because to me, if you don't have the Hispanic mindset, you're not a Hispanic. Even if your last name is Lopez or Gonzalez or Gutierrez, it doesn't matter. If you don't have the culture, you're not a Hispanic. And then you're not trash. So that was the third thing that I believe we needed to talk about. And the fourth and last thing, and I guess we will not get to the Civil War this time, is the rebellion in Iran. People on the streets are rebelling against the regime. And this reminds me of what happened in 2009, if I'm not mistaken, when the people of Iran rebelled. But unfortunately, they had the bastard Mandrel, that baboon, Barack Hussein Obastard, in the White House. And interestingly enough, Joe Biden was in the White House as the, quote, vice president as well at the time. And they did nothing. And the people of Iran got squashed. And the rebellion was ended. And now they're rebelling again because police brutality, Iranian police, killed a woman because she was wearing the wrong I forget the name of the thing, jihab or whatever, to cover her head. She was wearing the wrong scarf or wrong handkerchief and whatever, and they killed her. So the people of Iran are rebelling. They're saying, we've had enough of this oppression. And the sad thing is, no one is listening. And now, unfortunately, the same Joe Biden who was in the White House at the time is now there again bad fortune of the Iranian people. And the conservatives are kind of bringing this up, but more or less to make the Democrats look bad. That's all they care about. But they don't really have a deep care for the Iranian people. They really don't. So if we had to do anything to help the Iranian people, the conservatives would get outraged. Oh, we don't get involved. That's not our problem. But as long as we can use it to make the hypocrite Democrats look bad, then we will use it. And that's the sad thing, that the American selfishness in the conservatives, and then just the completely hypocritical and unaware attitude of liberals. You know, all these liberals were waving the Ukrainian flag. Oh, yeah, we stand with Ukraine. Yeah, stand with Ukraine, you stupid idiots. You don't even understand what has happened in Eastern Europe. You have no idea. You don't even know where Ukraine is on the map. These same people who are waving the Ukrainian flag couldn't care less about the Iranian people who are fighting for their freedom. They couldn't care less. Why are they not waving the Iranian flag in support of the Iranian people? You know why? Because the Democrats have not declared it essential that they do that. Because all these young liberal idiots only follow what the Democrat Party says. If the Democrat Party says, wear a mask, they all wear a mask. If the party says, get an injection, they all get an injection. If the party says, stand for Ukraine, they stand for Ukraine, even if they don't know where Ukraine is on the map. And because the Democrat Party is not saying protest in favor of Iran, they don't do it. That's the situation we're in. In a country of idiots, a nation of idiots, and they're living in their own little bubbles and selfish worlds. And that's why the country is dying, and it has 13 months left to live. And we didn't get to the Civil War content, but we'll do that in a future, in the next snippet, hopefully. Thank you very much for listening.